Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Dan's Annoyed Edition. Coming up, we'll get you ready for Sunday's game at Paul Brown Stadium between the 2-4 Bengals and the 2-5 Indianapolis Colts. Dave Lapham will join me for a breakdown of the matchup, and we'll talk to a beat writer from the Indianapolis Star who thinks the Colts hit rock bottom in the Chuck Pagano era in last week's 27-0 loss to Jacksonville. We'll also look back at a couple of key questions from last week's game in Pittsburgh, namely, why didn't Joe Mixon get a handoff in the last 2.5 quarters? And what the heck happened on that fake punt? And in this week's Fun Facts segment, you'll get to know offensive lineman and Mozart lover, Trey Hopkins. Before we get to all of that, here's a reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. It's the greatest invention since suitcases with wheels. My back thanks the inventor. So why is this episode called Dan's Annoyed? The reason is a story from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette that got a ton of attention the day after the Bengals lost in Pittsburgh. The opening paragraph read as follows. There were players laughing, joking, and having a good old time in this locker room after the game. The star linebacker had many jokes and told them loudly to the delight of some of his teammates, and they laughed and joked right back at him. First off, the star linebacker is clearly a reference to Vontaze Burfict, who is basically public enemy number one in Pittsburgh. Now, I was in the locker room after the game, and I didn't see him joking around, but it would not surprise me if that was true. Vontaze can be immature after a frustrating loss, and he might have acted up a bit after the game. But the final sentence of the third paragraph in that story is what ticked me off. It read as follows. The Bengals had just gotten punked in every way imaginable by their bitter rivals, but nobody in the locker room seemed to care. That is a crock of you-know-what. If the author didn't see anybody that appeared to care, he wasn't looking. And it bothers me that so many people shared that story on social media, making the account seem credible. There was no disco ball in the Bengals locker room. I interviewed 6 players after the game, including George Iloka, who was so ticked off, you could almost see the steam coming out of his ears. I asked George if he was bothered by a story that claimed that nobody in the Bengals locker room seemed to care after Sunday's loss to the Steelers.
I don't take it personally because I didn't see any of that. That's never been me, like you just said. So I didn't know where it came from. So I just took it as when you lose in this league, a lot of reports, you know, come from different directions. There's no source behind it. There's no nothing behind it. It's just, you know, banter. I didn't really take it personal. I just know the guys. I know how much effort we put into the week of practice leading up to the game. I know how much guys really wanted to beat those guys. So anything said afterwards from any media personnel doesn't change how disappointed I know I was and how disappointed other guys were. So, yeah, I mean, we have bigger things to worry about in terms of trying to get back on the right track than to worry about those kind of things. That doesn't affect us going into this week. So, but I can just tell you personally, that I didn't see that, and I don't know where that person got that from.
Even if Vontaze Burfict acted up, does anybody think he doesn't care about a loss to the Steelers? Anybody? Listen, you can criticize the Bengals for how they played on Sunday or for their 2-4 record this year, but if somebody tells you they don't care, that person has no freaking clue what he or she is talking about. Dave Lapham spent 10 years in an NFL locker room. I spoke to him about how players act after a loss.
Well, everybody's different, Dan. You know, guys handle those situations differently. Guys handle death in the family differently. They handle success differently. They handle failure differently. And that's what makes the world go round. If everybody handled the same way, it'd be a boring place. Was there some maybe frivolity? I didn't see frivolity, but I mean, I didn't see, you know, people walking around like it was doomsday. But, you know, it was a typical locker room to me after a loss. Guys were melancholy about losing a football game. I think this guy had an agenda. You know, where was he when Antonio Brown was taking his cell phone and filming all of his teammates after the playoff loss and putting them in a bad spot to advance the number of viewerships and therefore his advertisers for him to make personal gain off his teammates in the locker room after a loss? I think that's a bigger story. You know, if you have an agenda, you can find anything you want to find. But to maybe find one guy who might have been in that situation and have a broad brushstroke of the entire locker room, having, like you were talking about, a disco party, that dog doesn't hunt. I didn't see that at all.
Item number two. Why on God's green earth didn't the Bengals hand the ball off to Joe Mixon in the final 2.5 quarters after he had rushed for 48 yards on 7 carries, nearly 7 yards a crack? I posed that question to offensive coordinator Bill Lazor the day after the game.
There were a couple reasons, I think, if you look at how those series went. First of all, we were 3-and-out, interception, 3-and-out. So when you have a 51-play game, no one gets it enough. You know, and there were a couple plays we chose to put someone else in for particular things. Had nothing to do with Joe, and it worked out that way. There were some plays where Joe was in the game, and the defense they chose to play got us to pass on some run-pass options, and that's always part of the game. And then you get to that point in the game where it's a passing game to go, you know, to go beyond and to try to catch back up to win the game. Because at some point, then the key is win the game. You don't worry about how you do it. It's just to win the game.
Let's take a closer look at what happened. Jeremy Hill started the second half, and the Bengals had a 3-and-out. It's fair to question why Jeremy was in the game, but that's why Mixon didn't get the ball on that possession. The Bengals' second drive began with an 8-yard run by Giovanni Bernard. The next play was an interception. That's why Mixon didn't get the ball there. And on the Bengals' third drive of the second half, 2 of the first 4 plays were passes to Joe Mixon for a total of 10 yards. The fifth play was Andy Dalton's second INT. And by the time the Bengals got the ball back, they were down by 12 in the fourth quarter and felt like they had to throw it, and it didn't work. The lack of carries for Mixon is a little more understandable when you do a deep dive, and I'd be shocked if he didn't have at least 15 carries this Sunday against the Colts. Indianapolis is having a strange year. The Colts' 2 wins are against the only teams in the league without a W, Cleveland and San Francisco, and when the Colts have lost, it has frequently been ugly. 49-9 to the Rams, 46-18 to the Seahawks, and 27-0 to the Jaguars last week. Time to bring back Dave Lapham for a closer look. Lap, the Colts are coming to town this Sunday without Andrew Luck. This is his 6th year in the NFL. The first 3 years he stayed healthy. The Colts went 11-5 each of those years and went to the playoffs. He has not been healthy the last 2 years, at least for the entire season, and they did make the playoffs. And now this year, he has not played at all after having shoulder surgery in January. In steps Jacoby Brissett in his 2nd year in the NFL, picked up just before the season began from the New England Patriots.
Yeah, and Jacoby Brissett is a big, strong guy with a big, strong, powerful throwing arm. But the reason Andrew Luck isn't playing this year, he's only played 70 games, and this is his 6th season, into his 6th season. And in those 70 games, he's been sacked 156 times. That doesn't count hits, pressures, everything else. That's getting him on the ground. And it's hard to get him on the ground. He's a big, strong, athletic guy. Jacoby Brissett experienced the same thing last week. Jacksonville sacked him 10 times. So it's the offensive line is the reason that they're having issues at the quarterback position. But Jacoby Brissett is a guy that isn't going to turn the football over. He's only got 3 interceptions, tied for 6th fewest in the NFL. But he's only got 3 touchdowns, 32nd tied in the NFL at that spot. So, you know, he's somebody that if you rush and stay in your rush lanes and get after him and maybe show something pre-snap and something different post-snap on the back end, you should be able to have some success with him. But you better mind your P's and Q's with T.Y. Hilton, though. His primary deep ball target is because Brissett can get it there and get it there with authority, and Hilton's averaging 19 yards a catch, so you got to watch out for that combo.
Frank Gore is still there, running back, still going strong at age 34.
It's incredible. I mean, you know, he had a 1,000-yard rusher, 1,000-yard rushing season at the age of 33. The last guy to do that, John Riggins in 1984. So Frank Gore is a man. There's no question about that.
Lap, the Colts do not have a very good defense. They are giving up nearly 32 points a game, dead last in the NFL. What's the weakest link?
It's that back end, Dan. They're really struggling. I mean, they're giving up over 300 yards a game on the back end, passing the football, 31st in the NFL. Their yards per play is 6.4, 31st in the NFL. Yards per pass attempt, though, 8.92, almost 9 yards per attempt. Not completion, per pass attempt. So almost a first down every time any opposing quarterback goes back to pass. They've given up 10 touchdown passes. They've given up 10 touchdowns rushing. And they've got 4 against them on returns. But they are struggling on the back end. And they lost Hooker, their first-round pick out of Ohio State, leading the club with 3 interceptions, tied for 3rd most in the NFL, probably the most by any rookie. And they lost him to a knee injury. So, you know, now they're going to have a converted corner, Butler, probably playing there at that safety position. So you got to figure that the Bengals, might be able to take advantage. But they did go out and sign some people in free agency. Jabal Sheard is a legitimate player. He had 5 sacks for the Super Bowl champion Patriots last year. Jonathan Hankins out of the New York Giants organization, they gave him $30 million over 3 years. He is a horse up front. Big man. You got to get a couple of helmets on him. So they do have some players, but overall, you should be able to take advantage of the Indianapolis Colts at home.
The odds makers agree the Bengals are favored by 10. Stephen Holder covers the Colts for the Indianapolis Star, and after that shutout loss to the Jags last Sunday, he expressed the opinion that the Colts have hit rock bottom in the 6 years that Chuck Pagano has been head coach. I asked him why when Stephen joined Lap and me on the Bengals game plan show.
What I saw on Sunday was a team that wasn't competitive, and it wasn't the score, because, you know, I've seen worse than 27-0 losses. Well, I don't know if I have, actually. But, look, it wasn't the score. It was the fact that I didn't see a team that really fought. I didn't see a team that pushed back when certainly the Jacksonville Jaguars exerted themselves. So that, for me, is what was most concerning. And Chuck Pagano, through his 6 years here, look, he's had some low points. They have had a lot of lopsided losses, even when they were winning 11 games in their first 3 seasons under Chuck Pagano. But what they really did was not ever be in the football game or ever show any kind of fight. And they've also shown an ability to bounce back from losses. And here they were, here they were this week, coming off a loss in Tennessee. And instead of bouncing back, they actually had a much worse performance than the previous week. So that, for me, was a real red flag.
Offensively, gave up 10 quarterback sacks. Look at your eyeball, or talking to coaches, or both. How many of those sacks were on Jacoby Brissett for holding onto the football? How many were on the offensive line? How many were on the running backs and blitz pickup? How many were on receivers for not running proper route, making Jacoby Brissett hold on to the football? What's the story that you've found out and determined with respect to those 10 sacks?
I think if we could give about 25% blame to each of those, I think that's probably the way to go. So it was one of those things where, look, the 10 sacks will always get the attention of people who didn't watch the game, and they'll obviously make assumptions, man, that offensive line is really struggling.
Right.
And they are. However, there's no question, Jacoby Brissett is part of the problem. He's a huge part of the problem. And I know this sounds harsh to say about a kid who's 23 years old and has been on the roster for 7 weeks. It's not fair. It's just not fair, okay? But it is what it is. And the fact of the matter is, right now, teams have figured out if you blitz Jacoby Brissett, if you bring pressure, his biggest, I think, shortcoming right now is decision-making. He's not a quick decision maker, and you've got to make decisions in a split second when they bring that pressure. Now, I'm fully expecting that this week with the Bengals. I mean, they certainly have a reputation for doing that anyway. So I think it's going to get worse until he figures out, or until he proves that he can handle the blitz and make decisions in the face of that blitz. So in some cases, as you pointed out, look, the offensive linemen didn't get the job done, and they're really beat up on the line right now. They lost Ryan Kelly in the course of that game last week. They've got three offensive linemen on injured reserve. So, I mean, it's been a mess. But again, I think Jacoby Brissett can mitigate that by just making quicker decisions, but maybe that's too much to expect, you know, for a kid under the circumstances. 23 years old, like I said, been on the roster 7 weeks, didn't have training camp here, barely knew the offense when he went out there for his first start. So it's just it's a tough set of circumstances for everybody involved, and there's not an easy answer, frankly.
Stephen Holder is our guest. He covers the Colts for the Indianapolis Star. T.Y. Hilton was critical of the offensive line after that game last Sunday. How did those comments go over in his own locker room?
Not well. And I think, you know, most people would expect that. And look, this was frustration talking from T.Y. Hilton. He doesn't have a long history of doing stuff like that, although he did have a little bit of an outburst a couple of years ago about play calling. But generally speaking, he's not been a guy who's known for that kind of thing. So this was a little out of character for him, but I do think it's not okay. He's got to be a leader. Look, he is the senior member of a receiving core that is very, very young. And he's, what, 27 years old, I believe? So he's got to be that guy. You know, Reggie Wayne's not in the building anymore. I mean, he's got to be the guy who is the leader of that unit, and that's not leadership. And to be quite honest, look, I have to tell you, I feel like his comments about the offensive line not getting the job done, while there's some merit to it, I frankly feel like it's more driven by him not getting the football, okay? And if that's the motivation for him making his comments, then they're even more inappropriate, because I just doubt his motives. I'm just telling you on that. I have doubts about his motives there. I think he's frustrated about him not getting the ball and not so much frustrated about the offense having its overall struggle. So maybe doing some editorializing there, but that's just my experience with T.Y. Hilton.
Wasn't he targeted like 8 times and only had 2 or 3 catches, though? I mean, he needs to look in the mirror a little bit too, right? I heard that, you know, he apologized to the media about his statement of the offensive line, but I haven't heard that he's apologized to his offensive lineman yet about his statement about the offensive line.
So the update today from him was that he has talked to some of them personally, but not all of them. You know, look, I don't know. It's not in T.Y. Hilton's makeup to be humble. And look, he's not alone, all right? We've all met a lot of receivers who love themselves, right? That's fine.
Divas.
Certainly not the first.
Diva Club.
What's that?
Diva Club.
Yeah. So, look, he's not alone in that club, certainly. But I think in this respect, in this particular instance, you really have to put the ego aside and just take it on the chin. He was wrong. He knows he was wrong. Chuck Pagano told him he was wrong, and you got to make it right. So I don't know that it's going to be made right, frankly. If those conversations haven't taken place by now, I tend to doubt that they're going to happen, unfortunately. So you then have to ask, is that going to be an issue moving forward? I mean, these guys will get the job done. I mean, they're not going to let that get in the way. They're paid to do a job, and they'll do the job. But it certainly doesn't help the chemistry. It's not like they have a ton of it to begin with right now. So it's certainly not a good development. And I think T.Y. Hilton should have been much more of a leader on this. If you make the mistake, okay, that's one thing, but you got to bend over backwards to clean it up, and I don't think he did that.
Right.
A couple more questions for Stephen Holder from the Indianapolis Star. You're not a doctor, but I'm going to ask you to play one on the radio. Does Andrew Luck play again this year at some point?
Oh, man, I sure hope so. So, look, I think there's still a half-decent chance, and one thing I tried to do today was to pin Chuck Pagano down on this a little more, and I think I did. We'll see if he was telling the truth ultimately. But what I asked him was, look, it's going to be much later in the season at this point because of this recent development and setback in the rehab or in his practice schedule, I should say. So we know the timeline is going to be pushed way back now. We're talking about Thanksgiving and beyond here, you know, and that's where we're at. So I asked him, I said, look, if he gets back and it's late in the season, and the record's not good, is there will any of that impact the decision to play him? And he asserted to me, Chuck Pagano did, that nothing has changed. If he's healthy, he's going to play. And I actually do believe that. It's more of a question. I know your question was, is he going to play? Well, it's harder to really know that just because timeline has just completely gotten thrown off now. It'll depend on when he gets back on the practice field. If he gets back next week, then I think he can get back on schedule and maybe have a legitimate chance. But I would say in closing that I think they should play him if he gets healthy. The reason being, if Andrew Luck does not play in 2017, the next time he takes the football field will be in August of 2018, and that's a year and 8 months since he last played. And I think that's too long. I think he needs to get out there and play, and I think that would be good for the Colts and be good for Luck's own mental state, to be quite honest.
It certainly doesn't appear that Luck will be back in 2 weeks when the Colts host the Steelers. And 2 weeks after that, Pittsburgh faces Green Bay without Aaron Rodgers. Here's a question you might have been asking after last week's Bengals-Steelers game. What the heck happened on that fake punt? The Steelers had a 12-point lead with about 7 minutes to go when they faked a punt on 4th and 7 from their own 40. One of the protectors, Robert Golden, took the snap and lofted a beautiful pass to Darius Heyward-Bey, who beat Darquez Dennard for a 44-yard gain. Here's the explanation from special teams coordinator Darren Simmons. And the he that he'll refer to is Darquez Dennard, who wasn't quite in the right position.
We were taking a chance. We were trying. We were at a situation or a point in the game where I felt like we had to try to do something right there. They got a good gunner over there in Heyward Bey, and we were trying to do some things to affect him and potentially change the way they do. We were trying to come after the punt. We were trying to do some things in a rush, and he's supposed to get out a little bit further. But we didn't execute that part of it good enough. We're not supposed to ever give up that throw. We know it's something they could do, and they did it. And I give them kudos to them. I mean, hats off to them. They executed. It was a risky thing that they did. I mean, that's incomplete. And you know, I made a statement a minute ago. They tried the same thing in 2014 on us. The exact same situation in the game. They tried to fake on us. We picked it off. Dane Sansbach picked it off, and they tried it this time. And they got it. So give them credit.
So Quez wasn't going to rush and try to block the punt.
He's trying to bait him into some things from a protection standpoint. So he should have been out a little bit further.
Bottom line, it was a risky play that worked. Now time for this week's fun fact segment, where we get to know the person under the pads. In this case, the only NFL player I've ever met who's a big fan of Mozart. Time for some fun facts with Bengals offensive lineman Trey Hopkins from the Houston area. Your bio says you play the saxophone and the clarinet. How early did you get involved with playing music, and how big a part of your childhood was it?
I started in sixth grade, and I mean, it was a huge part. I mean, I played musical instruments and was in the band before I played football. I played basketball first, started in first grade. I mean, I wasn't very good at it, but got to sixth grade and knew I wanted to do music, so it was a huge part. And it wasn't until the middle of my ninth grade year when you had to make a decision between whether you want to go on to be a marching band or play football that I had to pick one, and I picked football.
And you are a fan of Mozart, correct?
Yes, I am. I
love Mozart.
Have you encountered any teammates at any level that are also fans of Mozart?
No, I haven't been fortunate enough to, but I haven't polled 100% of the people that I've been around, so maybe someone's lurking around here that I just haven't talked to.
We're doing fun facts with Trey Hopkins. What did or do your folks do for a living?
My dad used to work for Budweiser. He worked for them for 27 years. He was a forklift operator, just loading and unloading pallets. My mom is currently a respiratory therapist at St. Luke's Hospital in Houston.
Any siblings?
I have a younger sister, 20 years old. She is currently in college, goes to the University of Houston in Clear Lake.
As a high school senior, you were the offensive player of the year in the Houston area. How does an offensive lineman get the acclamation of being the offensive player of the year?
I have no clue still to this day. I remember kind of sitting there and being at the table. They have the same dinner you always have. You have like a little steak, some asparagus, same little tea, and just kind of sitting back in my chair. And I think the defense player had already been announced, and I'm sitting here next to quarterbacks and receivers, of course, as you would expect to win it, and I'm the only offensive lineman up there. And then I hear my name called, and I remember the defensive player had a piece of paper he pulled out with the kind of acceptance speech already written. And I remember my first words being, well, I didn't really expect to win this, so I don't have a fancy piece of paper to pull out of my coat. I was kind of just there for the dinner and just for the – I thought it was an honor enough just to be in the building and be nominated. I definitely wasn't expecting to win it.
We're doing fun facts with Trey Hopkins. You went to Texas, and you were the first member of your recruiting class to commit – Had that always been a dream of yours?
Definitely. It was always my dream school. I mean, I had repeated that over and over again. My dream school is Texas, and they weren't the first to offer me, but as soon as they did, I was on board.
You earned your degree in biology and contemplated pre-med, correct?
Yes, I did. When I first came in, I was wanted to be a chemistry major. Ended up switching that to biology. Wanted to do pre-med. I wanted to be an anesthesiologist. And then actually, my junior year of college, I switched up and started shadowing therapists, not sports medicine therapists, but occupational therapists and actually just physical therapists that work outside of the sports medicine field, and did that for my last 2 years there. And, I mean, I loved it. And I kind of going back and forth to which route I would want to take. But, I mean, therapy definitely has a special place in my mind right now.
What were your favorite courses in getting that biology degree?
Favorite courses? I mean, I don't know that you really have favorite courses in a biology degree. But, I don't know. You get some what people would consider soft classes in a biology degree that are usually the more fun ones, like ecology would have been one, just because those are the classes where you get to look at more of the big picture as opposed to always talking about cells and molecules and things like that. So those are normally the classes I think that I enjoyed the most. Genetics was okay, but again, that's another, really, you're looking at small things you can't see with your eyes. So ecology would probably be my favorite, just off the top of my head.
We're visiting with Trey Hopkins. Despite a great college career, you didn't get drafted. You were signed as a college free agent by the Bengals. Does that stick under your craw to this day?
Not too much. I think I've kind of put it in the past for the most part. I mean, there's still a little bit of, there's kind of like still a little empty space when draft day comes around, just because, I mean, you see and you remember what it was like that day that you, everyone's waiting by the phone, your parents are waiting by the phone with you, everyone's excited, and you kind of, you get, I mean, I was already a day three guy thinking coming in, and you just always hope to hear your name call, see your name go across the screen. I mean, it didn't happen, but I've been blessed and fortunate enough to still be here and going into my fourth year, so it's working out okay so far.
You broke your leg in college and broke it again in the preseason as a Bengals rookie. Do you have pins, rods, etc. in that leg?
Yeah, there's one long nail that goes through my tibia, and then I've got some nails, some screws holding it to place in my ankle and my knee. There's quite a bit of hardware in there. I haven't been stopped at the airport yet, so that hasn't been a concern.
Yet being the key word. Who were your favorite athletes growing up?
I didn't have many because I actually was not a big – I didn't watch a lot of sports growing up. That wasn't my thing. Like I said, I played basketball, but I didn't really watch basketball. I mean, I watched football when it was a family event. I mean, I grew up being a Cowboys fan just because that's who everyone else in my family liked. I didn't have a lot of people I looked up to in the sports world, really, until maybe college, and that was just older guys that had played before me that I had just seen their film, and that's when you get to wanting to emulate players and things like that. But I wouldn't say I have one person I was a huge fan of.
How about outside of sports? Is there somebody in history that you would most like to meet?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of any. I mean, the one person that I would say would be a family member, I don't know if that counts or not, my grandpa. I mean, he's just been, I mean, me and him, I will say we have a great relationship, but he's just not a big talker. And for the few words and few long conversations we had, he's taught me so much just about life and about being a man and being strong and resilient. And I remember when I was younger, we have a farm in Crockett, Texas, and I remember on the way back, this is still when I was in the band, I hadn't even started playing football or anything like that, he just said, well, whatever you do in life, whatever you decide you want to do, always try to be the best at it. And that is something that stuck with me since that day, and for that reason, and a lot of little gems like that I'm sure everyone has stories from their grandpa, he'll always be that guy for me.
Last fun fact for Trey Hopkins. I read somewhere that you were into magic tricks as a kid. Was that the case?
I wasn't into magic tricks so much as I love them. I was big into them. I couldn't perform them myself. I don't know that I was dexterous enough with my fingers or sly enough, but I just love the concept of magic tricks and sleight of hand and things like that. And also I just grew up being a huge fan of any kind of magic or any kind of thing like that. I mean, I was a huge Harry Potter fan growing up, loved the books, loved the movies, all that kind of stuff. I mean, so anything that was any kind of magical, I was really big into growing up.
Make some defensive linemen disappear.
Yeah.
Trey, appreciate the time. Thanks very much.
No problem. Thank you.
Trey suffered a knee injury in the season opener and missed 3 games, but he returned to the starting lineup last week in Pittsburgh. Last but not least, time to bring back Dave Lapham to find out what the Bengals need to do to get a badly needed win on Sunday over the Colts. All right, partner, let's get to this week's Keys to the Game.
Okay, Dan, you know, the first thing that comes to mind, we were doing the game out in Pittsburgh, and the Bengals go 3-for-4 on third down to start the game, thinking, wow, a couple of touchdowns, you know, fall behind 7-0, tie it up, 14-7, tie it up, and they're converting on third down, staying on the field and finishing drives. Then it dries up. They go 0-for-7 to finish the game. Why? Pittsburgh really took away first down success, and then the Bengals really started to struggle. Indianapolis is 31st in the NFL, allowing 6.77 yards per play on first down. So the Bengals have to do a good job on first down, making third down more achievable, making it third and manageable. And then protection pressure situation in this one is interesting. The Bengals didn't record a sack against the Pittsburgh Steelers because they ran the ball so effectively. They really couldn't tee off on Ben. And for the first time, they had a 34-game streak where they had at least one quarterback sack. That snapped that streak. Well, start another one. It's a good team to do it against because this offensive line is struggling. They've given up 29 sacks, most in the NFL. And they gave up 10 last week to the Jacksonville Jaguars. You give up 10 sacks in a game, man, it's hard to look in the mirror after that football game. They have a minus 16 sack ratio, sacks accumulated as to sacks allowed, dead last in the NFL. So Bengals have to get after the quarterback, Brissett. Chunks, Indianapolis, they're allowing 8.92 yards per pass. Dead last in the NFL. Almost a first down every time the quarterback attempts a pass. Not completes a pass, attempts it. So they're getting blasted on the back end, there's no doubt. And the Bengals, you know, have to take advantage of that. Better watch out, though, for T.Y. Hilton because he can chunk you. You know, I mean, that's a situation where he can make a lot of big plays down the football field, averaging 19 yards of reception, leads the NFL by a long shot. He's got 512 yards receiving. And A.J. Green has 545. But this guy's done it on 27 catches.
Wow.
It's incredible. So beware of T.Y. Hilton, and then get your receivers down the football field against this Indianapolis Colts secondary.
And that's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe. And please do me a favor and give it a rating or leave a comment. It would be great to know how many of you are listening and what you think. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.